I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors on this presentation. Today I want to talk to you about the comparing the transport of Bacillus subtilis, this is a aerobic spore, with a pathogen, Cryptosporidium parvum. So we can look at whether the surrogate, the aerobic spores, will be a good indication of groundwater under the direct influence of surface water. So as we know, groundwater is an important drinking water source throughout the U.S. and Canada and in the world, and that 52% of our drinking water comes from groundwater. And there's been surveys of groundwater both in the United States and in Canada that suggest that 15% of all groundwater tested positive for various pathogenic microorganisms. And there's little regulation of private wells, so there's a potential for waterborne disease outbreaks. And in the world, there are very significant numbers of individuals that die each year from waterborne disease outbreaks. And it's difficult to determine pathogen concentrations in groundwater. And this is for a number of reasons. One is that their concentrations are low and variable in groundwater. And because of this, you have to filter large volumes of water, and then you have to extract the pathogens from your filter. And the extraction process is difficult, and it's timely and costly and expensive to measure pathogen concentrations. And frequently, the analytical procedures that are used to determine these pathogen concentrations are only semi-quantitative. So it's highly desirable that we can find an indicator for pathogens in groundwater, so we can know when groundwater is at risk of contamination. And so some of the characteristics of a good indicator would be that they are easy to measure and they're inexpensive to measure, that they correlate well with the presence of pathogens, and that they should provide a conservative estimate of pathogen transport and fate. Now, in the U.S., regulations for groundwater protection have focused on the pathogen Cryptosporidium parvum, and there's an image shown here. And today we want to look at the ability of aerobic spores to serve as a surrogate for the pathogen Cryptosporidium. Now, the motivation for selecting the aerobic spores is based on some data collected by the EPA. They've sampled more than 700 public water supply systems in the U.S. for a variety of indicator microorganisms shown here. And one thing that you'll notice here is that the aerobic spores show up in much greater frequency than all these other potential indicators. Around 30% of the public water supplies tested positive for the aerobic spores. So this is the motivation for why we want to compare the transport of the aerobic spores with the Cryptosporidium. And the EPA came to us and asked us to do some of this work. And so initially what we did is we did a literature review comparing the properties of the Cryptosporidium oocysts to the aerobic spores. And I'm not going to repeat all the results here, but in some cases the oocysts were greater than the spores, and in another case it was just the opposite. But there were quite a few unknowns, and these unknowns had primarily to do with the environmental fate of Cryptosporidium and the aerobic spores. So that's what we will focus on today. And specifically, we want to know if the aerobic spores will transport to a greater distance than the oocysts. And if they do, that means that they were our conservative surrogate for the oocyst transport. And so if you don't find aerobic spores in your wells, then that's a good indication that you're unlikely to find the presence of pathogens in your wells. And so initially what we did is we looked at the surface charge properties of the Cryptosporidium oocysts, shown here, and the zeta potential of the aerobic spores, as well as the zeta potential of the sand that we used in our experiments, over a range of solution ionic strengths. And what you see is that the oocysts and the spores and the sand are all negatively charged, but the spores are more negatively charged than the oocysts. And so this implies that you would expect repulsive electrostatic conditions to exist between the sand and both microorganisms, but the repulsion would be greater for the spores than the oocysts. Now, we use this information to do some calculations of the interaction energy between the microorganisms and a heterogeneous solid surface. I don't really have time to go into these type of calculations, but we considered both a smooth surface without heterogeneity and a nanoscale rough surface with heterogeneity of the size of 25 nanometers and a fraction of 5%. And we did these calculations that considered electrostatic double layer interactions, van der Waals interactions, and Born repulsion as well. And this table summarizes the results of these calculations, and it shows the predicted depth of the primary minima, the energy barrier height, and the depth of the secondary minima. And what you see is that the energy barrier height changes with the solution ionic strength and the roughness. And so as ionic strength increases, the energy barrier decreases and is eliminated. And as with nanoscale roughness, the energy barrier is also diminished. And with nanoscale roughness, also the depth of the secondary minima is diminished. So the next step we did is we did some packed column experiments in which we injected the microorganism in three phases. We had a pulse of the microorganism, we eluted the microorganisms, and then we had a transient phase to look at the release of the microorganisms when you reduce ionic strength to DI water and when you also do a 12-hour flow interruption. And we did these type of experiments for a range of physiochemical conditions, a range of ionic strengths, and a range of Darcy water velocities. And so quickly, here's some results where we've compared the transport or breakthrough curves of the aerobic spores to the oocysts for various solution ionic strengths. And we also have model results shown here. And what you see here is that as ionic strength increases, you get increasing retention and decreasing transport for both spores and oocysts, and you see that in general the spores are transported to a greater extent than the oocysts. Now, these curves look quite similar, but they were done at a different water velocity that was around twice the velocity of the previous slide, and you see a similar trends existed for both this. Now, one thing that I want to point out here is that you also get low amounts of release that occur for both the spores and the oocysts. And this has important implications that we'll come back to later in the presentation. Now, when we do the transient phase, when we elute with DI water and we have a flow interruption, you see that for the spores, at the two water velocities here, you get large pulses of release of the aerobic spores. And when you do this 12-hour flow interruption, you even get further pulses. And the amount of spores that are released are highly dependent on your initial ionic strength during the deposition phase. And it's also very dependent on the water velocities. Now, so one important point to take home from this is that the retention of the microorganisms in the porous media is not irreversible. It can be reversible, and large fractions of these microorganisms can be released eventually. So this has important implications for your predicted setback distance for wells from a contaminated source. I should also point out that we did similar types of experiments for the oocysts and got similar types of results. And so now let's look at this data in greater detail through analysis with a mathematical model shown here. This is a mathematical model that considers advective and dispersive transport as well as liquid and solid phase inactivation, and retention on the solid phase that is both reversible and irreversible. And so we can determine the analytic solution for this, and that's shown here, so that we can estimate the setback distance to achieve a certain log removal of the microorganisms in the systems. And in this case, we assumed a 6-log removal. And so from this mathematical model and the fitted parameters, we can easily compare the results for the spores and the oocysts. And what you see here is that for a given water velocity, the results for the spores and the oocysts are quite similar. And in fact, we see that the spores are a conservative surrogate for the transport of the oocysts over a range of velocities and a range of solution ionic strengths. And these same trends are reflected by the calculated setback distance. And you see that the setback distance dramatically increases as you decrease the solution ionic strength and as you increase the water velocity. Now, we can also look at calculations from filtration theory for this retention rate coefficient over a wider range of velocities, which is shown in this figure, and over a wider range of grain sizes, which is shown here. And you can see that for these wide range of conditions, the spores were always a conservative surrogate for the oocyst transport. Now, we can use mass balance information from the phase 3, where we determine the mass balance after we go to DI water and we have the flow interruption and the mass balance of the microorganism on the solid to determine the reversible fraction of microorganisms in your system. And that fraction is shown here in this column for both spores and oocysts over a range of conditions. And you see that this reversible fraction changes with the water velocity and the solution ionic strength. And there's a couple of important points from this. Your predicted setback distance will be highly dependent on this reversible fraction. And that's what's shown here, the breakthrough curves here for different reversible fractions at a 1 meter distance when you use the parameters that were obtained at ionic strength of 1 millimolar and a water velocity of 0.2 centimeters per minute. And you see that this breakthrough curve is now highly dependent on this reversible fraction. And this is also reflected here by the predicted setback distance. And you see that the setback distance dramatically increases as that reversible fraction approaches 1. So as we wrap up here, I just want to point out that this setback distance here is also predicted to be a very strong function of water velocity. So in natural systems with the distribution of water velocities, these high-velocity regions will control the transport of the microorganisms in the systems. So finally, in summary, we believe that bacillus spores are a conservative surrogate for the transport of the Cryptosporidium oocysts, that you have low levels of release can strongly influence predicted setback distances, and this releasable fraction is a function of both water velocity and solution ionic strength, and that the field scale velocity variations will have a large influence on the predicted setback distance, but we need to do additional work looking at the different strains of aerobic spores and Cryptosporidium, which will also influence these findings. And with that, if I have any time, I'll take questions.
Time for one question.
So the tables demonstrate that 30% of the public water supplies had aerobic spores, which were orders of magnitude higher than all the other indicators. So what this means is that most of our public water supplies are of good quality, and we don't have to worry about microbial contamination. The 30% suggests that this fraction could, we may want to take a different look at these, a closer look at those wells. So OSIS weren't monitored in those samples.